It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Google puts pressure on the Swedish government not to coin a word for ungoogleable. We'll talk about that and all the Google news next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 191, recorded March 27th, 2013.
Google.
This Week in Google is brought to you by Hulu Plus. Watch as many TV shows as you want, anytime, anywhere, on almost any device, all streamed instantly to you. Visit HuluPlus.com/twit to start your free 2-week trial. That's HuluPlus.com/twit. And by Podio from Citrix. Manage your projects with files, instant communication, and collaboration all in one workspace. Start using Podio today. It's free. Just visit Podio.com to sign up, set up your first workspace, and invite your team to get started. Work the way you want to with Podio.com. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show that covers bash shell commands, apt-get, and, well, you should have just seen what we had to go through earlier in the show, but we've got it all done now, and everybody's working, and we're thrilled. Let me introduce our panel. Gina Trapani is here from smarterware.org. That's where
Hello.
She blogs, founding editor at Life Hacker, a hacker and author of Think Up, the great Twitter app. Nice to see you, Gina.
Oh, good to be here.
One more thing on your CV. Host of All About Android.
All About Android. Oh, yeah. Have lots of fun.
On the Twit Network. Mm-hmm. We also want to welcome Jeff Jarvis, who's here from his office at the City University of New York, where he teaches journalism. He's the author of Public Parts and What Would Google Do? And blogs at BuzzMachine.com and is currently offline. Guess those bash shell commands didn't quite do the job.
Oh, poor Jeff.
Let me also introduce on the far right here, Andreas Ekström. Andreas is a Swedish journalist. He writes for, let me see if I can get it right, Andre, Sydsvenskan, which is a newspaper, weekly newspaper out of Malmö, Sweden. Good to talk to you.
Very impressive. Thank you for having me on.
I'm practicing. Sure. Swedes invariably speak much better English than Americans speak Swedish.
This is true, but yeah. We're a small language of only about 10 million speakers, so it kind of makes sense.
Well, and it's language that's the topic, and the reason we're having you on. I know the French have the Académie Française, which kind of tries to keep vulgar English words out of their language. But I didn't know that Sweden has something similar as well. There's a language board.
Yes, it's a government. Actually, it's a government agency. And what they do is that they have as their job to monitor, develop, and maintain the Swedish language. As I said, it's only about 10 million people that speak it. And we're under constant influence and constant change from English and other languages. So what they do is they try to monitor what's going on with the language. How is it developing? What new words do we need? Do we need to invent something to not have to borrow an English word? And that has actually been the topic and what we're going to talk about today. There's been a googly connection there.
So is it common place in Sweden to say, Google me or let me Google that kind of thing?
Oh, for sure. I think Sweden is one of the most Googly-friendly nations on the planet. Last time I checked the stats, Google had a market share of 96% on search.
More than in the U.S., where it's more like 80%.
Way more than most countries. I think maybe Spain and Germany can be up there and compete.
Wow.
But
it's actually about 65% in the U.S.
65, is that all, Jeff? Holy cow.
It's that low here. It's 80-some in the U.K. It's 90-something in Germany. But I've never heard anything that's that high.
It's insane. I don't know. I guess the last few, they just bing around and then that's about it, I guess. We don't really use anything else.
What's interesting is that the Language Council of Sweden, did they add let me Google that to the language?
No. So what happened was that every year they put out a list of so these are the new words that we have found that we encourage you to use. And that's always big news every year. So these are the new words.
Right.
And one of the words that they put out was ungoogleable. So for like a word for something that you just can't find through Googling.
You would think they'd add the word Google before they add the word ungoogleable.
Well, in the official Swedish Academy encyclopedia, the word to Google as a verb has been there for a while.
Oh, it has.
It has, and it's in
and German, Google and do Google, and Google
and it's in Japanese as well as Guguru. So it's in several languages.
But Google didn't complain about that.
I guess not, but now they did complain. So they had this. It's been big news in Sweden this week. So what happened was that some people working at the legal department of Google decided that this was not cool. So they actually started a correspondence with the Swedish authority of language here saying that, okay, so you want to put the word ungoogleable in the language? Okay, that's fine. But we would like you to define it not as impossible to find on the internet, but impossible to find through Google. So they kind of want to have a stronger connection as a brand to that word, to not lose the brand connection to the word. You know, there's lots of examples like that. Like if you say Jeep today, okay, that used to be a brand, but now it's just kind of a way to describe a car. And there's tons of words like that. It was gone from like being a brand and now it's just a regular word in the language. So Google, I guess, wants to avoid that development by kind of protecting this. And the interesting thing is that the Swedish Language Council, they folded. The lawyers got them tired, I guess. They kept on writing long letters to them. And just finally the other day they said, you know what? Screw it. We're going to give up. And we're just going to take it off the list so we can, you know, keep on working with other things. And of course, that whole thing exploded. You know, that's an irresistible media piece here.
So they didn't say, "Oh, we'll modify the definition to be something you cannot Google." They just said, "We're going to kill the word entirely.
We're just going to kill the word." So nothing is anymore. You can't say ungoogleable, I guess, in Swedish anymore. But then, of course, you know, on Twitter and everywhere, people are saying, "Yeah, I'm going to make a point of saying it every day now," just because Google doesn't own the Swedish language. You know, it creates great opposition. But also, I say, generally, people are in a pretty good mood about it. But it's interesting because, I mean, to what extent can you say that a big international company can control a national language? With some letter writing in this case.
The issue is it is a trademark issue. I don't know if this is true in European law, but it's true in American law. If Google did not defend the trademark, then it will go the way of this is why every time that I've used Xerox as a verb, I've gotten
a letter?
I would get a letter from the Xerox attorneys saying, no. And they can't stop me from doing it. But if they didn't defend it, they would then have enough cases on they would lose the trademark.
Well, they're going to lose it anyway. That's the point. I mean, Kleenex, Zipper, Escalator, Linoleum, these were all trademarks that became common words. How do you stop it?
Xerox is still Xerox.
You still say I'm going to the Xerox machine, even if it's a Canon.
Yeah, sure.
When you Xerox your butt, you don't say I'm gonna photocopy my butt.
I had no idea that Escalator was a brand name.
Yeah.
I thought that was the word.
That's what happens. Aspirin.
You know, I'm surprised that they didn't. Well, first, I mean, on one hand, it's like, it's annoying that Google, the company, could change, you know, the Swedish language. But at the same time, I think it's surprising to me that the Swedish government thinks that they can dictate what language is. I mean, language is what people say, right? Not what, you know, a document reads. So
what they do is that they don't create the word, though. They look around for it to see, has there been a new word used? So they look for the new trends and then just make sure that they pick it up and say, so we've noticed that people are starting to say this. So they don't really make up new things, but they pick them up.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
It's opposite. They would not allow such a word to besmirch the language.
They block words.
Right. Use some utterly made up word.
Right. But
Iceland do that too.
The whole notion of a government commission that determines the language is so anathema to the United States that we don't even really quite understand.
I know.
You've got what?
We have 20 government officials that just work to protect the language. And I'm a big fan. I love what they do. And I also think they were kind of smart media players here by folding. Because obviously by folding, they get 10 times the attention.
Oh, yeah.
And it's good for Google, too. Google tried. They fought. They won. And the word's still there. Andreas, do me a favor. Say it in full Swedish.
Yeah, let's hear the Swedish word. Because it's not ungoogleable. Yeah,
no, it would be ugoogelbar.
Oh, I love it. I'm going to use that from now on.
That's That's pretty awesome.
And the thing is, I don't really like it. And this is only for the like other five people in Sweden who always listen to Twig. But for you guys, I would prefer it to be Ogoglingsbar. It's a small difference, but it would just make more sense with the Swedish language. So that's a bonus information for my few Swedish friends who always listen into.
What's the difference?
Well, it just,
it's grammatical.
It's just a grammatical thing. The way it would makes more sense to incorporate in the language
so
itself.
Help me learn this because you taught me Sydsvenskan. It's
Sydsvenskan. That's beautiful.
Yeah. So let me hear it again. So
this word would be Ogoglingsbar.
Ogoglingsbar. Ogoglingsbar.
You're a natural.
Ogoglingsbar.
Let me try a theory with you guys on why Google picks this fight. Let me see what do you think about this. I think that recently Google has put a lot of PR efforts in making us talk about certain things. Like we're all excited about the self-driving cars. We're all excited about Google Glass. That has a somewhat red herring quality. Now everybody's talking about a small Google detail, which means that we're not talking about those big issues the usual big issues like privacy. Too much big data, yeah. Privacy, and all these things that really could possibly throw Google into some real trouble. Do you think that's a part of a strategy of making us talk about small things rather than big things?
Jeff would be the expert on that.
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. I think that Google wants to be talked about in certain ways. I mean, look at we'll talk about it later, but the Google Glass thing, they're allowing 8,000 people to buy it. There's a huge deal being made about this. And so, they got 8,000 customers. That's all they got.
Yeah.
All of them tripping over each other to buy the product. I think they're brilliant at that. We're just being used, and we've, fanboys like me are out there tweeting away, and yeah, it works.
Yeah.
That seems a little, I don't know, paranoid. I don't think they're actively cultivating, what do magicians call it when you just, what do they call it, Chad, when you say, look over here.
That's misdirection. Misdirection.
They're not actively cultivating this misdirection.
No, but they like to be talked about, sure.
Yeah, and truthfully, they probably love it that people say, let me Google that, or can I Google you? But they can't just let it be. They have to at least show that they've – and, I keep seeing the article say pressure from Google and stuff. I don't think it was pressure. I'm sure that the Google attorneys just did what they're supposed to do according to U.S. trademark law to try to preserve this trademark. The issue is not whether people say it's Googleable or Ogoglingsbar, but more that if some company came along and called itself Google Search, that they'd have a defense in court saying, no, this is our trademark and we have – at every turn, defended it. I think that's what it's all about. It's not. I think they like people saying "Ogoglingsbar."
Yeah.
Well,
the lawyers have to do this. If they don't do this, they really could lose the trademark.
I like saying "Ogoglingsbar."
Yeah.
I thought that when I glanced at the story, I thought the story was going to be that Google didn't want the concept that something could not be found by Google to exist at all. And that's actually, that's not what they're saying, right? They're saying that they don't want Swedes to conflate not being able to find something on the internet with not being able to find something with Google. That's different,
right? It's quite the opposite, in fact. It's almost admitting, some stuff's not findable on Google.
Yeah.
Well, right? That's
the opposite of their mission. Right. Their mission is to make everything findable. Right.
Right. Like, but it's not the opposite of their legal obligation, which is to preserve the trademark. So they want it to always refer to Google, not to some generic internet.
Right. Because if you conflate Google and the internet, then you get to sticky a bad place. Right. Then you're in a dangerous spot.
Ogoglingsbar.
Right. I think
we try to make other words of that. Let's just say like un-Yahooable, un-Bingable, un-duck-duck-goal.
Un-Yahooable. That just sounds Swedish.
Un-Yahooable.
So I'm sure that there, if you ask Larry Page, he's probably saying, we love it that the Swedes say something's un-Googleable or go Google it, or that people in the U.S. say it, but we just want to stop it because we have to defend our trademark. And it's just a legal obligation. So saying they pressured them is really, I think that's overstating it. They probably just did what they need to do.
Yeah, they were pretty persistent, though. I've actually accessed the correspondence. It's been published, and they were pretty. I mean, they were polite, but they were persistent.
They're
and
lawyers.
I can see they're lawyers. Yeah. The Swedish Council is just like, screw it. We have other words to worry about.
I love that they just wore them down. Wow.
Yeah, totally. Oh, and I kind of think, as I said before, it's a pretty smart buy, you know, the head official at the Swedish Language Council to fold, because that makes people like myself really excited or upset and gets us talking about it. And I think so. We have the biggest language debate of the year in Sweden. So I guess they're just really happy up there.
Now,
it is a little bit of bullying.
The Swedes have better things to do.
Well, right.
Yeah, I guess. No, there should be a couple of things that maybe we should put some more focus on. But as I said, I'm pretty excited that we have some people who stand up for such a small language as this.
Andreas Ekström is also the author of a book about Google, right?
Mm-hmm. The one and only in Swedish. I had to write one. You know, yes, it's translated. It's well translated.
But and Google, did Google complain words. About, here's the cover, Chad, on my computer.
No, actually, that's the cover. I asked the PR people at Google if we could have a little fun with the logo as we made the cover, and they said, fine, go right ahead. So they were very, very cooperative and generous with that.
So, Jeff, you have a competitor in Sweden.
I know I do.
Andreas,
actually,
thank you.
Jeff and I spoke at one point when he was coming to Sweden to lecture.
Oh,
so
cool.
We've met before. Yeah.
Well, it's so great to meet you, Andreas, and I thank you for joining us
nice
late at night.
My pleasure.
Oh, say it again. Ugooglebar.
Ugooglebar.
Ugooglebar. I love it.
Like music.
Ugooglebar. He writes for the weekly Sud Svenskan in Malmö, Sweden. And his book is called what? Google?
Google Code, which would translate cleverly to the Google Code.
The Google Code. Thank you, Andreas. Yes. Great to talk to you.
Thanks, Andreas.
I love that. I've forgotten how to say it immediately, though.
We need a reggae chat room.
Un Google bar. Swedish is such
remix.
A melodious language. I would want to preserve it, too. And French. But it's one of the things that's kind of interesting about English as a language, and American English in particular, is that we embrace these neologisms like crazy. And there's no government agency says you can't say that.
Right. Well, I mean, we started out by changing, you know, the right. British English, right? So.
Right. Un Google bar.
Good. You're good.
Un Google bar.
I'm not even trying to attempt it.
All right, Jeff's still there? Wow, look at this quality of the image, too. Is spectacular, Jeff. You look great.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
And this is on the Pixel.
This is on the Pixel, yep.
We had to do a little manipulation before the show.
Command line.
We did. We made Jeff apt-get nano so that he could edit an XML file, a configuration file on Skype. But he did it, and it worked. And it was only because Gina and I could not translate from our fingers to our tongues
the VI
commands.
We had a slash, and then we had escape, colon.
But it's so when you do it in VI, it's so you just go.
Yep.
And so I'm going like slash, and then Google bar.
Google bar.
Let's take a break. When we come back, there's lots of Google news to talk about. Gina Trapani, Jeff Jarvis, Leo Laporte, This Week in Google, brought to you today by Hulu Plus. Brand new sponsor on the show.
Woohoo!
Yeah. Either of you ever watch TV on Hulu? It's kind of it's very valuable for anybody who is a cord cutter, but you don't have to be. In fact, Hulu Plus is now on pretty much everything that you might watch TV on. Not only your TV itself, the smart TV, but many Blu-ray players. Gaming consoles, PS3. I've got it on PS3. I've got it on Xbox 360. The Apple TV just updated the Hulu Plus. I was so happy. It's a beautiful interface. My Roku has it. Just got the new Roku 3. You bet. Hulu Plus, first channel I added. Mobile phones, tablets, and more. What's nice about Hulu Plus is you start watching a show on one device, it seamlessly translates to the next device. So you're in the middle of Family Guy. Don't worry. You pause it, and you get up, and you take your phone, and you're watching it where you left off. Hulu Plus gives you access to current season hit shows from networks like Comedy Central, Fox, NBC, ABC, and more. You can, they've got, you know, this is how I watch The Daily Show because I can't stay up. I watch Colbert and Daily Show that way. They've got classics like Firefly, even Twilight Zone, which is fun to watch, Rod Serling, Monday Night Raw. If you want to try it free, you get a double the a trial offer if you go to HuluPlus.com/twit. Try it free for 2 weeks, and but only when you use Hulu, HuluPlus.com/twit. Glee's on there, Gina.
Oh, classic good Glee.
The old Glee, versus, the way it used to be.
Firefly, though. If you haven't seen Firefly.
Oh, I love Firefly. Yeah. What a great show. And you can watch it in order this time.
Brown coats.
HuluPlus.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of the Twit Network. Make sure you sign up and watch today. Free for 2 weeks. Somebody asked, is this offer outside the U.S.? Doesn't say, but I would guess not. But try it and let us know. You know, it's funny because what we do, internet broadcasting like this, is totally global, as you can see. But advertising, this is a whole new area for advertising. They've never thought in terms of global. At best, it was national. And agency, you know, when an agency makes an ad buy, they make an ad buy for the country they're in. We have been training our sponsors, though. More and more, they're aware of the global audience, which is great.
It's good.
Yeah. I have been reading articles about the Yahoo acquisition of Sumly. Have you been following this story? What's interesting?
All I've heard is $30 million, 15-year-old.
That's all you hear. $30 million, 15-year-old. Actually, he's now, what, 19, right? But he started as the age of 15. And Marissa Meyer, blah, blah, blah. And that becomes a story. And in fact, Marco, you got to read Marco's blog post about it. Because he has some funny things to say about the whole thing. Apparently, this guy, this kid, has been bothering people since he came out with it. He writes, what's actually wrong with Yahoo's purchase of Sumly? He's 17. You're right. He's 17. I'm sorry, Gina. The company is a year and a half old. Yahoo paid, we think, nobody knows for sure because Yahoo's not saying, $30 million for it. A lot of geeks, writes Marco, have been yelling today about the Sumly acquisition. It's actually a textbook acquire. A startup that appeared to be missing its growth targets was acquired for a fairly modest price and immediately shut down by a big tech company in need of talent. But what's interesting is apparently the whole point of Sumly was it would take some text and boil it down into a few lines. And he says, Marco says, I only know that because I tried it while I was being barraged by Deloisio with manipulative, fake, urgent emails in late 2011. He said the summaries weren't good enough for me to try more than a few times, but the press never talks about the actual product in their articles about Nick. They talk about his age and how much he made. Apparently,
well, he also got Stephen Fry to make a commercial with him.
Oh, and he got investments money from big VCs. I think that was probably more of it. But according to at least one blog, the company didn't do any natural language processing of its own. It licensed the technology from another company.
Yes.
And you got to read the emails. Marco doesn't repeat his emails, but he points to a Gizmodo article that's titled, Oops, How I Made a 15-Year-Old App Developer Cry. In which the author, who is Casey Chan, who Casey does app reviews for Gizmodo, quotes emails from this kid that are the most annoying emails I've ever seen. At one point, saying, "Aren't you gonna? You gotta write a review, Doc. If you don't write a review, I'm gonna be out of work." Is it? I mean, it's just you gotta read these emails. Now he's 15 or 16, so you know, of course, he's a kid. But you have to wonder if a lot of this acquisition is really not about the PR that Yahoo's going to get, because it's not going to get technology and it's not going to get an accomplished programmer. In fact, it sounds like it's going to get a pretty annoying kid.
Yeah.
and what the point Marco's making is that the press doesn't care. The press covers the great, which is a story we all want to write. 17-year-old makes $30 million.
Tech millionaire, 17. Did we mention how old he is? He started when he was 15.
17.
Do you believe it?
Isn't it amazing? I love the internet.
Wonder boy.
You can do anything.
Yeah, I'm tired.
When she's next ready
stories.
To buy, I forget the name of the video company for $200 million. Said reports.
Well, see, this is the question others are asking too: is it now clear that Marissa Meyer is not going to be a content company? That the Marissa Meyer's Yahoo, I should say, is not going to be a content company.
That's one argument going on now, is that she's going to buy platforms and try to get us to create all the content for her, which is not unlike her last company and would make perfect sense. They spend a fortune on content creation.
Except that, unique, all of the money, all of the money Yahoo makes today is as a content creator.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's an advertising company. And the question is, it can put that advertising on most anything, including our stock.
Right. Anyway, wonderful blog post from Marco.
Yeah, this is a really good post. And I like how he said that that David Karp, who was his co-founder at Tumblr, made a point of not telling anyone he was 19 when he started Tumblr because he did not want that to be the story. He knew that that would be the story if he talked about it.
Marco,
and we saw this even with Aaron Schwartz, right? Everyone talked about when he was his age. Yeah, it was a big thing kind of.
Marco said he didn't even know. He was working for Karp for a year before he found out he was 19.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, it's great.
I love that. Somebody's saying, oh, come on, a few days publicity for $30 million, it doesn't add up. They're going to get a lot more than 30 days publicity, a few days publicity. And remember, what it tells you is Yahoo is a go-go tech company with money to spend to get the latest tech. I mean, I don't know. Or it could have just been look, there's two choices. It was either dumb or it was a brilliant, or maybe a dumb PR move. Maybe it was both.
Well, there's also another company, I don't want to say who it is, but it does, that I saw at Davos, that does something similar and does, in fact, do a lot of technology. And it had a similar offer out on it.
I have to say that Apple invented this 15 years ago.
Hmm.
It was called, Casper? What was it called? In fact, I remember the demos of them running a slider on an article, and you slide it to make the article longer or shorter to summarize it. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
That was years ago.
It was, right. Grandpa, yeah.
Grandpa. I remember this. And not only did they invent this technology, and they put it in OS X, nobody wanted it, you used it, and it's gone. Oh, it's still on the Mac? Yeah. It's still available as a service? I don't have a Mac in front of me. Yeah, in the services menu, summarize. In any event, this is nothing new. And according to Marco, the summaries that the Sumley made were worthless anyway.
Well, there's also a copyright question with this, is that if you take my article and alter it to that extent,
you know, I have two apps that I really am interested in on the iPhone. Circa is one. These are news apps. And the other is some guy, and I wish I remember his name. Dave, I think is his name, who summarizes both these summarize articles. They do link to the full article, and that's what Sumley says. Look, it just all we're doing is generating traffic for you. You see the summary. If you're interested, you go to it.
Well, Circa has a staff that's rewriting the facts into its format.
Right. But their claim would be the same. Yes, but we're writing it in such a way that you're going to want to read the original, right?
Well, no. Circa's point is not to send links out. Circa's point is to deconstruct the article,
right? And it's short little paragraphs. Well, are they in trouble? People mad at them?
No, because they're not rewriting anybody except they're taking knowledge. But information can't be copyrighted.
Ah,
you know the fact that the Pope quit. Is just a fact. The Pope quit.
So if you don't do it algorithmically, but you use human beings, it's okay.
Hmm?
If you don't do it algorithmically and you use human beings, it's okay.
Well, it doesn't summarize a single article.
Ah.
Right. It's like it's just an event, a news event. Right. I mean, they're basically writing their own news items. Essentially,
it's frankly like my favorite news magazine, The Week, which does it just has little clips from a lot of news sources. Right. This is what they were saying about that story.
An Evening Edition is similar.
Right. Go ahead, Jeff.
The AP has tried to argue for what they call hot news, which is to say that if this happened and we know it and you don't, we should have some right to that for a while. And it actually goes back to the turn of the last century when the telegraph came in and some would have an advantage of ours. I'm just back from India where I was last week, and I found out that there was one publisher there that's managed to, I think it's India, get the hot news doctrine accepted around cricket scores. Maybe Australia, where if we know it and you don't have anybody there, you shouldn't just take our scores. Well, the problem with that is, that is just information. You know, so-and-so won, so-and-so lost. How can you own that knowledge for a period of time? But that's the next fight going into the courts.
But Circa does no reporting of its own, right? They're just summarizing other people's articles.
Circa does have staff around the world to write the stuff. And, you know, I do the spiel about how we have to disaggregate the article into different assets and paths. They call it points and bridges. So the background paragraph in an article today ill serves everyone, right? If you know what the article is, it's a waste of your space. If you don't know what the article is, it's not enough. What should the background paragraph be? It should be a link to Wikipedia.
Right.
What should the lead be? Maybe it's a link to a Twitter feed.
Oh, how interesting.
Players and timelines and background and explainers and all kinds of things, right? These are different assets and different paths through them. So I've been writing about that for a couple of years, and David Cohn, who's at Circa, says that's kind of where they're headed. What they've done now in an iPhone app is just take the article into different hunks, and a few things happen that are interesting. One is that if you're following the story and you've already seen this part of the story, it won't show it to you again. It'll just give you what's new to you. Two is it changes the structure of the database. So if there's a quote, it's not part of that narrative. It's a quote that's off of the database, and four different stories can pull the same point. So it becomes kind of object-oriented journalism.
Very interesting. Yeah.
You got me at object-oriented journalism.
I like that concept, right?
Yeah.
But there's still some writing involved and some thought involved, isn't there?
Yes.
And this is cir.ca.
So there's a web interface? I didn't know. I was just using it on the iPhone.
Yeah, no. Oh, it's just that's just the site that lets you get the app.
Oh, it goes to it, yeah.
Tells you what it is, And is this Ben Ha's thing?
Yes.
I remember when Ben was kind of brainstorming this. He did it at a food camp. Yeah. How can we make news better?
Yep.
And this is what, this is what I ended up coming up with. I actually like it a lot. The only thing wrong with it is that it doesn't, it's like real news. I just want to read technology news. I don't care about anything else. If there were a technology version of Circa, there's a technology section, but you know, I don't care about politics and the rest of that stuff. Although I did, you'll be glad to know, change my Twitter icon to a equal sign. Facebook.
Good for you, Leah.
Did you, Gina?
I did, and I'm laying low. I'm trying not to.
So do you think it's? Oh, you're laying low for other reasons. We won't talk about.
No. I just mean I'm watching the Supreme Court thing going on, and right. I'm just trying not to get too hopeful. I'm just.
You're too invested in it.
I'm almost too close. Yeah. So I'm almost too close to it.
So I'm curious because you know, somebody I did it on Google+, Twitter, and Facebook, and somebody said, "Oh, another shallow little pseudo political involvement move." Everybody just changes their icon and that's all. But I think there's some power if you see a bunch of changed icons on a social media.
It makes me feel really good. It means something. It's meaningful to me.
I think it's meaningful. It's meaningful to you. It's meaningful to anybody who sees it and says, wow, there are a lot of people who believe in marriage equality.
Yep. Absolutely. And I probably should change. I should change my icon. I've been trying to like not be too anxious or too too close to it. I'm trying not to think about it too much in the hopes that we're going to get the decision that I want to see happen.
I was shouting at the radio yesterday as it was Alito who said, "Well, this is newer than a cell phone." It's not.
Oh. But as everybody said, you can't judge the tenor of the court on their oral questions at oral arguments because they ask weird questions, especially Alito. We'll find out. Sorry, Google, you could keep it to yourself. You weren't here, Jeff, last week. By the way, was India fun? Did you have a good time?
India was great. I mean, you know, I was there 3 days. I'm an expert. I saw all of India.
I can't understand how you could do that. The flight's longer than that.
Absolutely absurd, but I quite liked it. I was charmed by the people in the place, amazed by the media scene there that's different. I went to the Guardian Activate/Google Big Tent event in New Delhi. So I got to meet a bunch of Google people here, Eric Schmidt, which we'll talk about a little later. And so it was a lot of fun, yes.
Neat. Well, we missed you, but one of the things that happened during the show was Google launched Google Keep. And so Gina and I, we were all playing with it.
We were keeping it down. I was able to get it on my screen.
Oh, yeah, you got the widget. That. Yeah, on your Nexus 4.
Nice.
It's the lock screen widget.
Yes.
So O'Malik, I thought, had a very interesting comment. He says, sorry, Google, you can keep it to yourself. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. He says, I'm not switching to Keep from Evernote, and I'll tell you why. Two words, Google Reader. Mm-hmm. And I thought this when Google killed Google Reader, that maybe there was going to be, there might have been a strategic mistake, because are you going to trust Google not to kill the thing you like? And if you don't, then are you going to try new Google products? Buzz, same thing. I invested a lot into Buzz, and it made me hold back just a little bit on Google Plus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was my first reaction when they killed Reader, is what are we going to worry about next? There's a story I put up on the Rundown that speculates on other things that Google could kill, and it's a ridiculous list. It includes apps, just arguing it doesn't make enough money. I don't believe that for a second. But, yeah, you're going to wonder about anything. You know, could they kill voice? Could they kill anything? And that's an issue. I mean, I'm now completely invested. When I wrote my review of living the Google life, which is on my blog, the second paragraph became, this is now a cautionary tale because of what they did with Reader. Here I am completely invested in I'm living the Googleville, La Vida Google. I'm in it, right?
Right.
And if they kill something, I'm in a mess.
And part of the problem is we don't understand what makes Google kill or not kill a product. It felt like Google Reader was used by a lot of people.
Wasn't that many people. It was shrinking. What I heard, the best explanation I've heard so far, there was an argument made in Forbes that there was a privacy issue, maybe. But I thought
that was interesting.
The best
argument
I've heard from somebody who knows is what was said is friction. That when you've got to make every new update to the rest of Google, and you've got to keep that up to date, it's not so much they weren't spending a lot of money on it, but it was a pain to have to bring it along. And, you know, nobody's using it. It's shrinking. Let's jettison it. Now the bad conspiracy theory is they want to kill RSS and kill publishers. I don't buy that. I think it was just, this is small.
They did an interesting thing. I mean, they essentially killed all the small RSS readers by doing Google Reader, and then they killed Google Reader. Whether that was intentional or not, it did have a kind of detrimental effect on RSS.
It did. Well, it'll be interesting to see what comes out now that it's going away. But yeah, because it became the back end for so many desktop readers, right? And because it was such a good web-based product. Here's the thing, though. I mean, in all respect to Om, and I see his point here, but Om is saying, Evernote is great at this. This is what they do. They've been doing this for years. I'm not going to switch to Keep. I'm going to stay with Evernote because I know that they're not going away. But the reality is that any of these companies can go away, right? If Evernote doesn't have enough users, it could go away. Just the way that Google Reader could go away because it doesn't have enough readers. The key to the thing to focus on is takeout. Can you export your data? If something does happen to this product, if this company goes under, if it gets acquired by someone you don't like, if you get locked out of your account, can you take out your data and is it useful in the format you can export it in? And can you import it into something else or use it in what you have? I think that's really the big question.
That's a very good point.
Google does
Evernote. On the other hand, you could also say, but because Evernote has this one business, it's very, unless the business itself folds, it's very unlikely just to say, well, we're going to kill that little thing.
I do agree with Omen that Evernote's been thinking about this and doing this work and making this product for way more years than Google. They've put, they've made a lot of, and Evernote's a great product. And honestly, I think Keep is interesting. Keep looks to me like this is just Google showing off their Drive API and showing developers this is one kind of small thing that you can do with the Drive API. I think that's cool, but it's not enough to make me switch from Evernote because I'm a big Evernote user and I love it.
And I like Om. There is a speed bump for me, which is that they killed Reader, and so I'm not gonna. No matter how easy it is to get my data out, I'm gonna be careful about investing too much in any Google product. So that's.
Did you see Dave Weiner's new product?
Yeah, thought that was kind of interesting.
I didn't know what's it called.
I'm forgetting. I should know.
I am too.
It's the world's simplest thing. He's just using the HTML5 capability to store locally.
It's called it's called Little Outliner.
It's there.
So Dave,
but it's not outliner. What's it?
It's a small picture. That's it.
That's it.
Or no, Little Outliner. Little Outliner. It's a Little Outliner. Littleoutliner.com. So Dave Weiner.
It's stored locally, so you can't get it from elsewhere. But he's working on that. And it is it's even simpler than Keep.
He's the king of outlining. He invented Moore, which was the outliner on the Macintosh, and was one of the I think the first in the category, and that's where he made his money. He invented RSS too, and Little Outliner is a HTML5 outliner.
And stores an OPML.
That's kind of interesting. And it stores it on your computer, or where does it store it?
On your computer, locally.
And does it work with the Pixel?
Whenever you open the address, it's just there.
It should work with the Pixel, right? He says it takes advantage of a little-known HTML5 feature that allows you to store data locally. Mm. Maybe not little-known, maybe little-used.
Yeah, this is nice. This is cool.
Isn't that cool?
Littleoutliner.com, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just that one page. So you just go back to it, and everything you typed is there.
Yeah, isn't that neat? Yep. So I'll do a little. We'll do a little outline here. I'll go back.
He's using Bootstrap for it. That's cool.
Oh, he is.
Yeah.
Is that the Twitter JavaScript?
The Twitter framework. Yeah.
So I'm just typing into this, and so if I close this,
it'll be. Yeah, it's storing as you go, and you close it. It'll be back there.
Okay, and I can put in links. So we'll put a link. There's italic. There's links.
Yeah, that's what gave it away. You could see the blue button on the.
Yeah. Well, you know, you understand how. Yeah. Because you're smart.
I just use Bootstrap a lot.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's the look. Mm-hmm. All right. So now I'm going to close that tab. Just nothing. Just close it. Boom. Gone. And then let's open another tab and go to Little Outliner. Whoops. Let's type it right. Yeah, it worked. Bingo.
I just tried to open an incognito window.
Ooh, how does that work?
Yeah, it went away. Doesn't. So it's attached to your session.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense.
Be hard to think of how to do that otherwise. And there's a little demo on the site. A little video demo. That's cool. I'm not sure what the point is. Except that this is an HTML5 demo.
You know, I've learned not to ask that when Dave does something, because I usually don't understand it at first. I didn't understand podcasts, honestly, at first. Right? And Dave has a vision that it's Dave, and like Ed Williams, too. I'm not going to.
Right.
Dave's too fascinated with Medium. I'm not sure I get Medium fully yet, but I'm not going to count Ed Williams out.
The first time I went to Europe, I was a kid in fifth grade, and we brought a book called Europe on $5 a Day. And by the way, that was 1967 when you actually could go to Europe on $5 a day. It was written by a guy named Arthur Frommer. The Frommer's Guides for many years were the backbone of my travel. I love the Frommer's Guides. Google bought them, and they're gone.
Gone.
Well, the print versions are gone.
Print versions are gone.
Europe on $5 a day. Look at that.
Isn't that? It's just a classic.
They're on skiff.com. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so 60s. that book cover is very 60s.
But I love Frommer's Guides, and I actually lived on them every time I went to Europe, even recently. They were very reliable. Google purchased them in August of last year for $22 million. They bought Zagat as well, remember? And they killed the Zagat guides, those red, long red books.
No, I don't know that the guides are killed.
Yeah, they are.
They are?
Well, I'm pretty sure they are. Why would they keep them? They killed the site. They killed the app. Why would they keep the paper? I don't know. You're right. I don't know that for a fact.
Go to Amazon. I can't do it right now. Go to Amazon and see if they're for sale.
Does the Pixel prevent you from going to Amazon?
I don't want to touch anything. I feel like I'm...
They are still for sale, and they're still up to date. In fact, the 2013 New York City restaurant, Zagat Guide, is there. I have to think, though, eventually they're going to kill it. And what they did kill is the website and the app, and they incorporate it into Google Maps. And I presume they're going to do the same thing with Frommer's. Okay, they didn't kill the website. They killed the ability to go to the website and get reviews. Didn't they? I know they did it on my phone.
It was actually made
in Google Maps.
At CUNY.
And they... Oh, no, you can still do it on the web. Huh, that's interesting. Because I bought a subscription every year. And I got an email from Google saying, well, you're done. But
it's the paywall they got rid of.
Yeah. Yeah, they gave it away.
They don't bother charging for it.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess you could still go to Zagat, enter in cities. But you have to wonder, if you're Zagat, how much longer, you know, they killed Frommer's.
Hello, Frommer's, New York City with kids.
You got to get that book, Gina.
Yeah, no, I know. I got to get it before I can't get it anymore. I guess it published last month.
There was one thing I was a little worried about. When Google acquired Nix Software, they bought the Snapseed app. They did kill the Snapseed desktop version. And I was really, on tenterhooks because I use Nix Software's plugins on Lightroom and Aperture and Photoshop. And I just think they're the best plugins for photographers. Well, good news. And this is funny because literally February 18th, I updated my Nix Software collection. I spent, I think, $300 to update my Nix Software collection because I hadn't updated it in a while and get the latest versions. And literally 3 weeks later, Google has now dropped the entire collection to $149. And if you've ever in the last 5 years bought any Nix plugin, the rest are free now. But I'm told I'm going to get an email saying we'll refund the cost of your upgrade. I hope that will happen. But now $149 and highly recommended. Mac, PC, Photoshop, Lightroom, or Aperture. So they killed Snapseed desktop, but they didn't kill the Nix collection. At least not for now. But again, I'm gun shy.
Yeah.
Just makes me nervous. What will they kill next?
Update all the things.
Anything else?
Can we talk about Google Glass?
Yes. Did you wear it?
There's a few interesting things here going on. They've picked 8,000 people who will get the privilege, like you, of being able to buy Google Glass because they did the "If I Had Glass" hashtag.
I
just found out that one of my students in my entrepreneurial program, Andy Kropa, is one of the winners.
Woo-hoo!
Oh, that's awesome!
So when do you get your glass?
They get it in the wild, but his program, his business, his mother died of Alzheimer's, and he wants to be able to use cameras to help people with cognitive difficulties.
That's huge.
See their day, and in fact, he was just in the office. We were just going over this, just talking about wearing Google Glass, and then he sent me an email just now saying, "Well, speak of the devil, he got the message." So what happens is that on your original post on Google Plus, Google is now coming in and just leaving a comment there saying, "Welcome to the program."
You win.
That's great.
Of course, what this means is I'm checking my Google Plus notifications every 3 minutes, and I haven't gotten crap.
You should win, Jeff. Yours was good.
But
your entry was really good.
I'm delighted my student has won one. And there's some really neat things coming out. There's a teacher of journalism. Maybe he won instead of me, who got one. There's other things. There's about five or six of the first winners are on the rundown, Leo. But this is pretty cool.
So my question would be, they're getting the Explorer edition, as are we, Gina, right?
The right to buy it.
Yep.
$1,500.
Right.
My question is it a developer version? Is it or just, you know, it might be a little buggy, but here you go version? What are you going to get?
When I was standing in line, they were saying scale.
I bet you and they will all get the same thing, which is probably past developer. They've been showing it around so much. I'll bet they're nearly ready for production.
Sarah Hill works at the Veterans United Network, wants to use glass in a VA hospital. So that veterans can see.
Sarah Hill was one of the best users of Google Plus. She was a local TV anchor.
That's neat.
Who put Google Hangouts on the air and did a great job with that.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
She wants veterans to see their war memorials without having to go there. I might point out you could do that on a computer without the glass.
Yeah,
but
I would. We like Sarah.
Sounds like a good idea to me. Herschel Taghap handles social media for restaurateur Tom Douglas Co. and wants to give a first-person view of life as a line cook in a busy professional kitchen. Now, that would be cool.
Yeah.
Shannon Rooney would help her Japanese grandma revisit her homeland without having to leave her house. Again, it's not telepresence unless you have something on the other end that is telepresence.
Well, but here's the thing, Leo. If you followed the story of Monica M., who has various disabilities that don't allow her to get out of the house very easily. She can't get around. She's a wonderful, wonderful woman on Google Plus. And she and a photographer initiated the distance hangout. So a photographer got on, I forget who it was, I should know this, and he got in a rowboat and he put his phone on top of his camera and just showed her and then the world what he was seeing. And they could direct him and say, oh, go over there, take a picture of this. Go over there, take a picture of that.
Right.
It's not just that you're taking a picture of this and then sending it hours later to grandma. It's that grandma can say, oh, I remember this. Go to the left a little bit. See if that's still there.
Oh, so what Shannon's proposing is that she go to Japan and her grandma be at home. And then she's – okay. I thought her grandma was watching the through glass. Oh, no. How about the same thing with the veterans so that Sarah would go to these memorials and say, okay, veterans, now watch – TV, because I'm going to walk around.
See your name or see things like that. Yeah.
And they could give her feedback. Okay. So these are uses, telepresence uses.
Yes.
David Moriarty wants to revolutionize clinical trials by moving away from writing and transcription and towards image and data sharing with glass.
Okay.
Anthony Brown is a zookeeper who just wants to hang out with penguins. And honestly, who doesn't? So both of those, I mean, that means we're going to look through his eyes at penguins. Max Wood wants to improve firefighter safety somehow or other. But mostly we're going to get to look at a lot of fires being fought, which is awesome. I don't know who wrote this copy. Probably Gizmodo, not Google.
Yeah.
But...
yes, it was Gizmodo.
That was Gizmodo, yeah.
Awesome! Well, what am I going to use mine for? What are you going to do, Gina? The day in the life of a programmer and mom?
There's going to be lots of baby hanging out with Nona for sure. That's probably going to be the first thing. I don't know. I think it's just going to be, I think I'm going to go like hang gliding or something, right? I mean, that's what the commercial said that I should go do.
Bicycling, running, skiing, skydiving, or just playing with friends and family.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm going to kidnap Gina's brain to do journalistic things with them. I think there's a lot of things that can be done. And we talked about this once some time ago. I think there's some amazing things you can do with the idea of witnesses having these and journalists having these and how we do news updates and all kinds of things.
If I get, I probably will get tired of mine, Jeff. So I'll just send you mine when I'm done. If you don't get one,
we'll see what happens.
I'll be shocked if you don't get one.
Meanwhile, all these neat, nice things are being done with Google Glass. All these good possibilities are there. But the techno panic has gone berserk. So two things. There's a guy who did, it's on the rundown, 35 horrible things that could happen with Google Glass. You know, number two was it will start a surveillance society. You know, come on. Jesus, we don't even have them yet. And all this panic is going on. So my response on Google Plus was to write 21 horrible things that light bulbs will do.
It's like an episode of Downton Abbey.
Yes. The electricity could fly out of the socket and kill you. Actually thought that would happen. Okay, number one, they get hot and can burn people. They can explode. They can damage the eyes. People will get electrocuted. The system requires new and costly infrastructure.
I think that inspired it.
This is good. Yeah, the dispassionate estimate of the Edison light. Oh, you mean the one about the squaw? The Kodak and the squaw?
The tribute to
Edward Champion's arguments about Google against Google Glass.
So you look at his list, it goes on forever.
Yeah, I read it.
Imagine every horrible thing that could happen.
Yeah.
And it's techno panic. I mean, yeah, should we be concerned about some things? Of course we should. But geez, if that's all you concentrate on, that's all we're going to get. It will destroy whatever shreds of privacy we have.
Yeah, I keep hearing about how glass is going to enable you know, more creep shots and more, you know, especially after the Adrian Richards thing. It's like, oh, well, if everybody can take pictures of everybody at any time, then everybody will be publicly shamed always. It just seemed like a little much. And then we already have laws getting written to ban them during while driving.
And if somebody said fighter pilots have a heads up display, they managed to fly their jets.
This is the other thing is this isn't really a heads up display. It's a screen on your head. A heads up display, you look through it to see what's going on, like it's on your windshield. This is you look up to see the screen. It's not, you can't see through it, right? Well, we don't know yet.
You can.
There might be an augmented reality.
No. It's a piece of glass, so you can see it's translucent.
So it is heads up.
Yeah.
Except that it's not anywhere you'd want to look.
It's tiny. It's like over there. It's not going to take over your full field of vision.
Well, but it won't look tiny to you because it will look like it's a screen.
I know I'm going to get a headache. That should be number 36. It will give Leo a headache.
Now that you also have on the rundown an organization, one of these fake organizations that's going to protect us from everything, that started and is putting out banning the cyborgs signs.
Stopthecyborgs.org.
There it is.
Stopthecyborgs.org. I love it. But is this serious?
Oh, yeah.
Stop the Cyborgs was founded in response to the Google Glass project and other technology trends. You know, it's true if the armed forces can tap into my feet of Google Glass, it'll make a drone strike easier. That we know. I'm not completely against this notion.
Google Glass freezes.
I wrote a piece 2 weeks ago. We will figure this out.
Yeah, I don't think it's bad to pay attention to this, but I don't think you should throw the baby out with the bathwater either.
No.
This has all happened in the anime Ghost in the Shell.
Really? This is from the Ghost in the Shell?
It seems like, I mean, you talking about people hacking into your glass and using tactical, you know, being able to look through something to get a tactical representation of a room. I mean, that was definitely in that anime. But
fortunately, we have they've got some Creative Commons licensed posters.
Yeah, there's
no Google Glass allowed. So we now have the universal sign for no Google Glass allowed. It's a slash through an eyeball with glass on it.
Mm-hmm. They're selling T-shirts. This is interesting.
Really? So there's like a movement. Do you think this is a legit, like, this will actually gain traction, or is this just some...
It'll gain publicity is what it'll gain.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is just publicity during the launch, right? I mean, I wonder if we're going to see... I mean, there's plenty of places that say no cameras, right?
Yeah.
Already. Even though they can't stop camera phones.
The locker room at the gym says that, although I carry my camera phone in there every single day. I take pictures of the sign, post them on Instagram.
The understanding is that you're not going to
take a picture in the gym. You'd be hauled off, and you know that, so you're not going to do it.
Right. I don't think that's the problem with glass, but we'll see. I think some of the points people make that it's just going to increase the self-absorption of our society as people stare not at each other but off to the upper right-hand corner of their vision. That's not so far off. But we're doing it now with phones.
I actually started writing a post based on a conversation from 2 weeks ago. The idea that maybe the conversation you're having in real life in front of you is not as important as the conversation you're going to have on your Google Glass, which offended you terribly, Leo.
Same thing happened with telephones. You know, it still bugs me. People will answer the phone while they're talking to you. Like, whatever we're saying, this is more important. But that's just dick behavior, that's all. There will always be dicks. You know what I'd like to do? I'm in the mood for some trumpets. Chad jumped up. What were you doing? Were you leaning back? He had his foot on the feet on the console.
Sometimes I lean back a little bit.
Like this. Whoa! And then he jumps up. Maybe we should do the Google. I should do it faster next time.
Change log.
The Google change log.
About Gita Tripati with the latest from Google.
A couple of cool Google Plus changes. The Google Plus app for iOS and Android got a bunch of changes. Some of Snapseed's photo enhancements that we just talked about made their way into the mobile app. So you can do, there's just more options to edit your photos. You can do basic edits, you can rotate and crop, and you got filters. You can adjust saturation and contrast. So lots of better photo editing in the Google Plus app. You can now share your current location with specific circles on Google Plus. So you have to enable that, share your location. And then now this is it. You can already share, you know, show the places that you have lived, right, or been, but this is your current location, which you can, you know, choose, say, you know, have the share from my phone automatically, or you can opt out entirely. And what else? You can also, let's see, sorry. There's a lot more communities features as well. So we've seen a lot of communities features like moderation and turning up and down the volume of how many posts you see on the desktop. The mobile apps also got that. And the little change that made me wince until I saw how it would actually work, you can now use animated GIFs for your G Plus profile photo. This does not show up when you're looking at your stream, okay? So it doesn't show up when you're just looking at a post. You have to
somebody quick
visit
make an animated
profile.
GIF of Jeff doing that. I want that for my profile. That's my new profile. So it doesn't show up. When does it show up?
It shows up when you actually go to the person's profile, okay? So it's not in stream. So you're not going to have seizure-inducing lots of different animated
GIFs.
That's
the one I like. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you notice on that rollover on the screen that you have up, you know, it's the still shot. It's the first frame in the animated GIF, right? But when you have to go to the profile to actually see it to get the Harry Potter effect.
How many extended middle fingers are we going to get?
Oh yeah.
Yes. What else do we have? Oh, the Gmail.
Chad, did you make one?
I did my background, but Chad. This isn't new. But what I do like is when you hover over the thing, it makes it really nice in the thing.
Chad has his kitty cat looking back and forth as his, but that's the big picture, not the profile picture. I didn't know you could do both.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
And so that the cover photo does move when you mouse over, so that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Gmail app for iPhone got an update, and you can now swipe left or right to move between conversations on the iPhone without needing to return to your inbox. And it's easier to take action on multiple messages in Gmail for iPhone. So you can select a message in the inbox, and it enables an edit mode. And once you're in edit mode, you can tap on messages to select them and choose to archive, delete, or more kind of batch actions on a set of messages in iPhone and the iPhone app for Gmail or the Gmail app for iPhone. What else? Oh, Google Maps got lots of new transit information. So live departure times for 7 lines, the New York City subway system, buses and trams in the Salt Lake City area, and the Metro Rail in D.C. So this is really cool. I tried this out with my most frequently haunted New York City subway stations, and you can see next train leaves or arrives. So that's right on Google Maps, which would be really, really useful. And finally, this is really, really cool. Google's Knowledge Graph is showing up in movies on Android tablets. So movies from the Play Store, if you're watching them on an Android tablet and you pause the movie, the app will actually encircle the face of the actor that you paused on and show Knowledge Graph cards, right?
What?
So in this screenshot there, yeah. So if you're watching a movie, say, with Jack Black in it, and you pause it, it will circle Jack Black's face. And this is using facial recognition. This is not using the movie's metadata. And it'll show you the Jack Black sort of informational card that you would see in Google Now or on the right sidebar in the Knowledge Graph and search results. This also works for sound. So if you're listening to, if you're watching a movie and you hear a song during the movie, if you pause it, it will give you the information about what song that was using their sound search technology. So really cool. I'm just sad this only works on Android tablets for Google Play, for movies from Google Play. I want to see this everywhere.
Well, you'll soon see it on Google Glass as you watch the movie in the theater, I'm sure.
I mean, maybe if you're watching anything in Chrome.
That won't be the least bit annoying.
Forget movies. I just want to be able to walk up to someone at a conference and be like, show me their, you know, do they have a Wikipedia page? Show it to me.
Basically, life is going to be like pop-up video now.
Yeah. That's horrible.
Is that a reference that nobody...
No, we get it.
Yeah.
No, we
get it. Life totally is just it. An animated GIF.
Hey, look at the animated GIF I just put on my page as my My little animated.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Aww. Yeah. It's just a little. It's subtle. You don't have to go crazy with it. Just a little bit of. It's Harry Potter. Just a little blink every once in a while. I think it looks just like me.
Oh, that's really good.
That's a guy named Will Art did that on DeviantArt. Awesome. We're trying to get him to do a whole animated. I thought for April Fool's we should just do Twig as an animated show, like the Ricky Gervais show, right? We just take the. I think we can do that.
Dang, April 1st is on a Monday.
I know. April 1st, 2014. Ah. Takes a long time to do animation.
Take that much time to get it ready.
I think it'd be kind of interesting, though, to Ricky Gervais does that show, right? Mm-hmm. So they just record the audio, and then I think it can be done programmatically where the lips just move because, you know, they hear sound or something. Be cool.
That's all I got.
That's the changelog.
The changelog.
You know what's interesting to me is, and I don't know if Google got this as a signal from their experience with Google+, or if they knew it all along, but it's really becoming apparent that, you know, look at Instagram and look at how the photographers have taken to Google+. We're becoming much more of a visual society. That pictures really do represent 1,000 words, and more we communicate via pictures. And it seems to me more and more Google's really moving in that direction, you know, that they understand it's really about visual. Is that new for Google?
The new Google+ app on the Android actually reduced some of the photos and put some more text on.
You wanted to do that.
No, I'm saying that's what it did.
It did?
Oh, yeah. The new design on
Google Plus is slightly less emphasis on this on the huge photo.
Well, maybe they went too far.
Context for it, which I kind of like.
Yeah, but it's still pretty visual.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You can also get a photo-only feed, I think, on Google Plus now.
That's new, where you have just the photos. And that was one of the things that made me think that, is that maybe they're, you know, maybe that's one of the things that's going on. The photo-only feed is just, you know. Actually, that's my photos.
Those are your photos.
Yeah. So
how to do it, but.
Maybe you can only do it on the website.
Yeah, so I have nearby. I don't see.
It's definitely on the. Photos. Yeah, it's not on the. Maybe it's not on the app yet. It's definitely on the website.
This app, though, we were talking about this on All About Android last night, is really kind of like, I feel like it's Google's best designed, kind of the forefront. It's getting gets updated so often, and it's just really nicely designed. I feel like it's kind of the best of Android design.
Is it? Do you think more so on iPhone, or do you think Android's keeping up with the iPhone?
I honestly haven't used it very much on the iPhone.
Oh, how funny!
It seemed like the
iPhone was the one that they were putting the most attention to, and then later adding Android. But you know, I don't actually. This Android looks pretty good, so. It's so visual.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
So I think that Google, I think that might be an example of why Google+ is important to Google, because they can watch how we behave and why Glass was going to be even more important, and they can adjust their products to become more what we want. And in this case, more visual. They can make a photo-only feed, and they can add animated GIFs and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about like the dimension that, say, Street View added to maps, you know, it's one thing to look at a map, right? But then to be able to go down to this, and they want everyone to be able to contribute Street View photos, basically, you know? They want everyone to be equipped with a camera and make it as easy as possible to snap a picture and upload it to the cloud. That's what Glass is going to be, right? Yeah. Glass is going to be the easiest way to take a picture and upload it to Google.
Yep. Now they have Fukushima on Google Street View. If you'd like to see the devastation of the tsunami in Japan, they've added some imagery to Google Street View. I don't know if it's before and after or it was closed. I guess the exclusion zone is the area closed off to visitors after the earthquake, and that's what they in particular have images of. So they worked with the Japanese government to let cars drive through here. Oh, this is interesting. Because, no, you can't, right?
I wonder who got that assignment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, is it exclusion zone because of radioactive pollution?
So.
This is where the nuclear plant was. Yeah, there's some devastation, but boy, it's interesting. It's totally deserted, of course. Yeah.
That's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little eerie.
Walking Dead should be there.
It feels like it. We need that eagle sound that they always use. I can't do it. Glass will be 3G, right? Weeb asks in our chat room. Yeah, because it's tied to your smartphone. So it's always online. To answer your question. Moving on. I'm sorry, I was distracted by putting my animated GIF on Google Plus. Eric Schmidt says, it's Apple's fault. Apple says, screw you, Eric Schmidt.
Well, not so fast, Eric.
Eric Schmidt implied that now Google Now for iOS was stuck in the App Store approval process, at which point Apple checked and said, not only do we not have a Google Now app, there's no Google app. There's nothing from Mountain View waiting in the queue. So you're wrong, Eric Schmidt. You're wrong. It's easy to blame Apple.
This was at Big Tent in India. Alan Rusbridger of The Guardian asked why I can't have Google Now on my iPhone, and Rusbridger said, take that up with Apple. That was the exchange.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So it's the company line now.
But it wasn't true.
But it's not true. Unless they have a signal from Apple that says, don't even bother, kids. The real problem with Google Now on iOS is that you don't have access to the kind of information you do on Android. Apple locks down a lot of stuff. So I don't think Now could know as much about what you're up to.
Yeah, that's true. Although Now does have access to all your Google information.
Your Google stuff, sure.
Yeah, yes. But a Google rep confirmed, yes, we have not submitted Google Now to Apple's App Store.
Sorry.
Maybe Schmidt was implying actually that what you just said, that there are restrictions on iOS which make doing it difficult.
Right. We don't even want to try because Apple won't really let us do. But you can get the calendar. You have to ask permission, but you can get the calendar. You can get the contact list. You have to ask permission, but you can get it. You have all the Google information. What more would they need? Location information, you can get that.
Location. Mm-hmm. Access to Gmail. I mean, that's...
There's no humidity sensor on the iPhone. I'm just saying. I'm waiting for Google Now to say, you know, you seem a little moist. Perhaps you'd like to buy an antiperspirant.
Powder?
I'm talking about the Galaxy S4 has a humidity sensor.
Oh.
Yeah. Facebook's managing editor steps down, says, we don't need no stinking reporters.
I didn't know they had one.
Yeah, who?
Yes. Me neither.
I think they're right. They don't. They don't need no reporters. Apparently they had what, a managing editor? For what, Facebook News?
Managing who?
Don't know. Do not know. Any other stories before we get to our picks and tips and tricks?
Hold on here. Going back to...
Anything else you want? I don't want to use any numbers or anything like that. Anything numeric.
I'm trying to see what else there was.
Facebook hosts 250 million monthly gamers. Paid out $2 billion to developers. The Winklevi say, we're done with Facebook.
We're good. We're good.
We got enough money. We didn't mention Twitter celebrated its 7th birthday this week.
Happy birthday, Twitter.
I joined Twitter first in 2006, December 2006. So it was like
How
9 months old. I quit a few months later and rejoined in April 2007. Huh? I was the number one most followed person on Twitter for a while when I had 5,000 followers.
That's saying something.
Grandpa comes back.
Kevin Rose and I were battling for the number one position over 5,000 followers.
I remember that.
We thought it was a big deal at the time. Little did we know.
Android team's building a smartwatch.
Yeah, so is everybody. Apparently Samsung is.
Yeah.
Everybody, LG. Was it LG?
LG is. Everybody's building glasses, too.
Yep.
Apple's got glasses. They got it all. Everybody's doing everything. There's no new ideas under the sun.
Oh, I know there's one more here. Well, I should mention that just for the sake of the record here, since we are the podcast of record, that the Leistungsschutzrecht
yes
has passed both houses of the German
parliament. Oh, no. That's bad news, right?
Just wanted to say it. The other interesting little story in my little world was a New York Times social person went crazy this week calling, saying that hashtags were too ugly.
They're ugly. They're so ugly.
Ugly.
They're just unaesthetic. They're not pretty. I don't like them. Hashtags are everywhere. Path just added hashtags. Christmas Cena invented the hashtag, right, Gina?
Yes.
Yeah, so Chris linked to it from Google Plus that just said hashtag burn.
This, the reporter, Daniel Victor. Oh, no, this is a story in the Neiman Journalism Lab. Who did the New York Times story?
Aesthetically.
Which usually doesn't troll, but this one seems like a little going after the links.
Yeah. I think there's plenty of people using hashtags. Oh, no, Daniel Victor, social media staff editor at the New York Times. That's him. So what is the Times? Hashtags are dead and the Times is on it. Are they gonna stop using hashtags? I don't think I think he doesn't understand what hashtags do.
No. They organize things. They're a platform. They enable people to gather around an idea. They're very valuable for news.
He says, according to Twitter, Super Bowl was used 3 million times, the hashtag Super Bowl, over about 5 hours. Look at all those people who might be interested in our jokes about Beyonce, and yet getting any single person's attention is short of impossible. But what happened as a result is that the trending topic was Super Bowl. You knew people were interested in Super Bowl. You clicked that link. You could see the Super Bowl tweets. That's how it's supposed to work. What's wrong with that?
So he said that doesn't scale because he can't read them all. Well, in that case, guess what? Twitter doesn't scale because you can't read all of Twitter.
Welcome to the internet, buddy. You know, this internet thing is not going to work because I cannot read it all. I think it's going nowhere. It's overwhelming. Did you know there's like millions of pages? I can't read that. Can't read it all. There's no evidence people are actually using the search tool in that way. In most searches, the quantity of tweets is overwhelming and the quality underwhelming. That's a Twitter problem. That's not the hashtag problem.
No.
This is that same article we see every few months about Twitter's stupid. I just discovered it, and it's stupid. I don't like it.
I like your Valley Girl accent.
Twitter is just stupid.
Stupid.
I don't like it. Why are everybody on Twitter? Where did MySpace go? I want MySpace back. Oh, I love this one. This is a store... Where is it? It's not in the U.S. It's in...
I forget where it was. Australia, I think.
Australia. Talk about not getting... Unclear on the subject. Although I understand... I'm sympathetic with the desire. The store posted this in the store window. As of the 1st of February, this store will be charging people a $5 fee for just looking. The $5 fee will be deducted when goods are purchased. So, in other words, you're going to pay admission to go buy something at the store. Why has this come about? There's been a high volume of people who use this store as a reference and then purchase goods elsewhere. These people are unaware our prices are almost the same as other stores. Plus, we have products simply not available anywhere else. So, it's going to cost you $5 to come in here, buddy.
Wow.
Unclear on the concept. So, but what do you... I understand... This is called showrooming, right?
Yes.
And I understand. I mean, if I were a camera store, I'd be kind of depressed because probably people come in every single day and say, well, let me see what's the coolest thing, what's lightweight, what's neat, what's cool. Thank you very much. I'm not going to order that on Amazon. I don't blame, you know, I understand that. So what do you do?
You have to change your entire business model just like media have, just like everybody else.
Welcome to the world.
Yeah. Sorry.
You can. I'm telling you, as a shopkeeper, you can overcome that by offering better service, better support, fair prices. You don't have to undercut Amazon, but Amazon's not that cheap. And now that they collect taxes.
On the show.
Pardon me?
Sorry. I was involved because of what would Google do with a bid to develop a very large unfinished mall in New Jersey. And the guy who came to me, his concept, I don't want to give it away, but it was straightforward. It was the go with the trend and physical space becomes marketing space.
Right.
And fulfillment happens from wherever it's going to happen.
Right. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that. Make it people look at people still love to shop. They love to look at stuff. Just make it a wonderful experience. Give them a cup of coffee.
Here I am in the center of the universe. I used to go out at lunchtime, you know, on some days, and I would go wander in a record store or in a bookstore or in an electronics store. I can't do that. You can't browse in the real world anymore.
Yeah, they don't make it easy.
Nope.
Charging $5.
$5 the door. sort of late addition of the changelog. Thanks, MX, in the chat room. The official Android or the Android official blog just posted that the Google Translate on Android is getting an update that's going to involve offline translation. So you don't have to have a connection. Yeah, which is nice.
I can download. I did see it. Here's the update. I can download French ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. So if you're traveling, you're not sure what your connection is going to be like.
That's great. Yeah, translate kind of without a network, offline language packages, Android 2.3 and above. And now it can translate vertical text in Chinese, Japanese, and Korean with your camera. That's really cool. Google Translate is so cool. And it was so funny that Samsung and their Galaxy S4 announcement made a big deal about their Samsung translator, which as far as I could tell was like Google Translate, only not as good.
Right, except Samsung, yeah. It's true. It's interesting. They're using this thumbtack icon, the same icon that when you download music offline in Google Play and play music.
That's smart. We all get it. I'm tacking this. That's the ultimate skeuomorphism. I'm thumbtacking this right to my phone. My phone.
all you need is a wooden background behind and a piece of paper. Right. There's my language pack thumbtack to my corkboard.
What language should I translate to? Chinese. We'll be right back with your tip, your number, and your...
Oh.
I ran out of time.
Cut you off.
Cut me right off. It's good to do it in Chinese because then nobody knows if it was right or not. With your tip, your number, and your tool of the week, but first a word from Podio.com. Podio from Citrix lets you manage all of the data. You know, nowadays, work is data-driven, isn't it? We're knowledge workers. All of us are knowledge workers. And the problem is you've got your team, sometimes not even in the same space. They're all over the place. You've got your emails. You've got your data. You've got your spreadsheets. And you need a way to pull it together, to collaborate, to work together, and that's what Podio does better than anything I've ever seen. All the information, in fact, I can log into my Podio account and show you how we're using it for sales now, which is so cool. Podio.com. Here's the best part. It's free. So you can go there right now. What I want you to do when you go there, though, is set up a workspace. Pick a topic or, you know, if it's sales or whatever. Set up a workspace so you can try it, and you'll see... the amazing thing, there's OMG Craft, Employee Network. You said you shared it with me, right? Oh, Lisa was showing me what we do with sales. It's really kind of cool. Did you share it with Leo at twit.tv? Maybe you didn't share it with my business account. But you see, you have the activity stream. You can see all the employees. You can check. It's like a little Twitter. You can talk back and forth. But you can also do assignments. They have apps that are fantastic. You can add, you can create your own apps easily, but you can also add, there's a very large store with tons of different kinds of apps available in it. It's really a remarkable tool. Keep track of all the information you use in your day-to-day life. Let's see. Guest expense voucher. Procedures document. Is that it? Staff meeting. Well, we're using this for a lot. Vacation. We keep track of vacation time in here. Staff bulletins. It's amazing. Try it free. Podio. Podio.com. Sign in, make a workspace, whatever you want to work on, a project or all sorts of stuff, and then invite your team to join in, and you could do it. Here, we could. I wonder why I'm not seeing it. So we keep track of all of our leads in here. This is actually, can you see this over the shoulder? This is Lisa's computer. So all of the leads we keep track in here. Oh, look at me. Look at me trying to use the touch screen on your MacBook Air. Can't do that, apparently. You got to get a better computer, Lisa. So we keep track, in progress, who's responsible for it, project kickoff and completion project. This is amazing stuff. Really a huge tool. PODIO.com. You got to try it. But if you try it, you set up a workspace, I think you'll get some idea of what it can do for you and your business. And we thank them. And Citrix, the folks who make it, for their support of Twig. All right, I'm ready, Gina Trapani, for your tip of the week.
Hey, Gina, you're muted.
I'm muted.
But first,
sorry.
You have to unmute yourself.
First, I have to unmute myself. Second time in a row I've done that. Okay. Jeff Kraft. Still coming through. I don't know. Jeff, badass. Ubuntu on the whistle.
He did a good job.
He did a great job.
No, you did a good job.
You're vying text files the command line. So, okay, tip of the week. Last week when Google Keep launched, right before we started the show, we were trying to figure out if there was a way to start it up from Google Now. And actually, there is a way to do this. So Google Now, if you tap the voice icon in Android, there's a note to self action. So you can say, like, note to self, go pick up milk. What that used to do is just transcribe, you know, go pick up milk and email that to you. But what Android Now does, it has a hook into note-taking apps. So now not just Keep. So Catch and Evernote both hook into this as well. So if you want to do a quick note to self, you can launch Google Now. Oh. You can say note to self, pick up some milk. And on the first time, it'll say, hey, what app do you want to handle this? Gmail, Catch, Evernote, Keep. You choose the one you want. You tap always. And so you can do a quick note to self using the app of your choice now, courtesy of Keep. This seems to be a new thing that launched around the time that Keep launched. But it does work with other apps, which is kind of the beauty of Evernote. Android, is that you can really share to any app you want to handle in action. You can configure to do that.
Oh, that's cool. It just saved the note, though. Maybe I'd already told it Evernote. Let me see where it saved
it.
Here it is. Complete action. Using Evernote, Gmail, or Keep. Yep. That is really cool.
Yeah, so note to self, voice action, Google Now.
Yep, okay. Note to self. Mm-hmm. I'm going to always use Evernote. There you go. Wow, that's cool. Jeff Jarvis, your number of the week.
So you might make fun of me for this. One of my very favorite shows on the Big Tube is Shark Tank.
Yeah, I'm going to make fun of you now.
No, I like Shark Tank. I
this is it. Where it was an entrepreneur sits down in front of a bunch of people like Mark Cuban and pitches his idea, and then it's kind of like American Idol for investment.
Yeah,
and then they mock you.
Stars, which is pretty good, pretty cool.
Yeah.
So So I'm going to look to the side here, but at SharkTank.TVQuotes.net, they've done a compilation of the total investments. And the Sharks have invested in four seasons, $20.04 million
wow.
in 109 companies.
Wowie zowie.
Wow, that sounds like
which
a lot.
Which is pretty amazing, right? And so they've gone through all the deal valuations, the equity, what the ask was versus what they got. For us Shark Tank friends, my colleague here at CUNY, Jeremy Kaplan, pointed this out today, and I was in statistical heaven going through this. So for those Shark Tank fans, it's actually having an impact. People are actually investing in companies.
You know,
it seems like they say no a lot. Like I watch the show, and it sounds like they say no a lot. And it sounds like they also don't invest a whole lot. So that number sounds high to me. But I guess I haven't been watching it all four seasons. But that's great. That's really cool.
What is Dragon's Den? What network is that on?
That's BBC.
And the British version of Shark Tank. Okay.
Yes.
Can you watch it on BBC America or do you have to pirate it?
I don't know. I think you can. I don't know.
Everybody in the chat room knows all about Dragon's Den. You can watch it in Canada, too. Our friend Scott Jordan, who runs Scott eVest, was a guest on Shark Tank. They didn't invest. But he says to this day, and this was a couple of years ago, he gets 100 search terms a day. People searching for Shark Tank who end up finding his website, Scott eVest, and go there and it's a very good way to drive traffic, even if they don't invest in you.
Exactly. I'm friends now with the co-creator of the Three Doodler we talked about a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm begging him to go on Shark Tank. Perfect.
I don't think he needs to. How much money did he raise on Kickstarter?
Raised more than $2 million, but again...
he doesn't need to. It's just a pen that extrudes plastic.
Say, wow, I want
Right, but it's not about the money. Some of the
I have some doodles here in the office. Wait a moment.
Wait. Oh, you got yours. Oh, boy. So for those of you, and, you know, Steve Gibson was talking about this on Security Now earlier today. He was all excited about this. So for those who don't know, it's a pen that you draw, but you could draw. Now, did you do these, Jeff, or did he do these?
My students did. I was in my office with it, so the three doodler.
That's great.
Wow.
Boy, if really I could only do that.
Before. Is there a cube in that?
Is there what?
It looks like someone made a cube.
Yeah, in fact, one of my students made a little dog, which you can find on my feed. I'm just amazed at this. What security issue could there possibly be with this? I can't wait to hear.
No, or there isn't. He loved it.
Oh, okay. He just liked it. Okay.
He just liked it. No, not at all. Not at all.
It's 3D. You can make a key and break into.
Although, you know, you saw that one of the interesting things that's starting to happen is people are using 3D printers to print gun parts so that you don't have to buy you don't even have to be licensed to buy a gun. You just print it. That's exciting.
Fantastic.
That's great news. That's great news. I'm just looking at all the stuff I've purchased. Or pardon me. See, that's my fault. It's not a store. Kickstarter is a marketplace of ideas.
A charity
where people with more money than sense get together with inventors. So this is what, look at this is the array of things that I have purchased. Diaspora was the first one, didn't get that. Dice didn't get that. Pebble Watch, still waiting. Joey Bra got that. The Cone coffee maker, got that. Didn't fund the Space Folk album. They wanted to make an album on the moon. Didn't raise enough money, I'm sorry. The Nifty Mini Drive, got it, didn't work. I'm getting the Oculus Rift. That's coming sometime soon. That's the 3D helmet. If Google Glass gives you a headache, that will. This is cool. The bamboo cases for the iPad, I actually have those. Those are good. The ostrich pillow I got, I don't understand why I invested in it.
That was just a poor choice.
How drunk were you when you bought that?
I'm drunk whenever I use Kickstarter. I'm drunk with power. $195,000 raised for this thing that you put on your head, you put your hands in the holes. It's got a little face hole.
How can you breathe? Yeah, there's a face hole.
There's a face hole. This guy's laughing all the way to the bank.
You all look like a-holes now.
The face hole might be a good title for this episode.
The face hole. Don't say I didn't get anything from Kickstarter. Oh, no.
Leo, you have a bad choice. You have a problem with making the wrong choices on Kickstarter.
I make the wrong choices on Kickstarter.
You didn't back Veronica Mars?
That should be your profile picture.
I did not. Did you back Veronica Mars?
I am a huge Veronica Mars fan, so I was right there. Oh, yes. Right there. I backed it before it even hit like 50K. Like, I was right when it... Well, that's not true. It must have been like maybe 250K.
So they raised, what, $2 million, $3 million?
The goal was $2 million, and they blew it. They blew it out. Like,
blew by that.
Let me check.
Now, what happens? Is the movie company going to make it now and then give the money to the investors? $4 million.
$4 million, right. So the goal was $2 million. And they set all new Kickstarter records. They reached $1 million and $2 million faster than anybody else that has. So I believe that the deal with Warner was that Warner would if they could prove that there was enough fan interest, that Warner would back it as well. So
this is like a petition. This is like an online petition, except people put their money where their mouth is.
Yep.
Or in my case, put my nose where the hole is.
Put your nose where the face hole is.
Yeah.
Tonight I might go to a concert by Natalie Dawn, who's also a star at Kickstarter.
Yeah. Oh, no, there's definitely some people who've done some. I think that's where I think Kickstarter makes a lot of sense. Creative enterprises, movies, TV, music.
Yeah.
To support you in making that and to gauge interest.
I've only backed video games.
And have you gotten any of them?
And not yet, but video games take a lot longer than the ostrich
pillow. I'm sure you'll get those any day now. And they'll be really fun to play, too. I don't know. I'm a cynic.
You are.
Wow.
I'm a cynic. By the way,
Google Double Fine Adventure. I'm excited about that one.
According to TechCrunch, Google Glass will be made in Santa Clara. They're setting up an assembly facility right now in Santa Clara, California. Oh. That's in the U.S. of A. Not Santa Clara, Spain. I don't have a tool. I'm just stalling. So thank you, Jeff Jarvis. You are the man.
Thank you, Leo and Gina, for taking me through command line.
That was very exciting.
It was very exciting. I feel like I wasn't much help, but way to go. Jeff, every single thing I've ever made fun of you technically about, I take it all back. You're totally.
He did a good job.
He did.
Well, we had to tell him.
I was nervous. My palms were actually sweating. I thought I was going to ruin it all.
Oh, no. Getting
he came with. He did come within inches of saving an empty file on top of the file we were trying to change, but we were able to stop.
Thing is, Leo, I'm going to have to do this all again. Because this is the loaner machine from Google. I'm waiting for mine.
Oh, that's all right, because you and I will both have one by then. And by the way, that was another scoop from Jeff Jarvis. April 8th is apparently the Pixels with LTE are supposed to start arriving. Looking forward to that.
Cool.
Jeff is the author of Public Parts, which you should get, read, consume, bring with you at all times in case you run into Jeff Jarvis, then ask him for an autograph. Gina,
I'll autograph it.
Gina Trapani is the author of the Google Wave book.
Oh, please, no. No.
And she still trusts Google, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, I build this app called ThinkUp, and Anil and I, my co-founder, we just launched a new homepage. You should check it out, thinkup.com. We're going to launch a software as a service app.
Yay!
So get on the waiting list right now. Yeah.
Now, are you going to go to the invite-only Twitter developer conference?
I haven't gotten an invite, so I don't know. I probably not. Not as far as I know.
Boy, I would think you'd. Well, I guess because you're not doing a Twitter app. Maybe you're not one of the people they think about when they think of developers.
Yeah, I don't know. I may have to nudge my my contacts.
So we'll be able to purchase a kind of a hosted server running ThinkUp.
Yeah, we're still finalizing details, but that's the idea. Yep.
Love that idea.
I'm
going to host ThinkUp for you.
And you're not going to run into the issues with the Twitter API, you know, the 100,000 people and all that?
No, because we're not a client. We're not a way for you to read your Twitter stream, right? We're not a client. We're pretty firmly in the analytics quadrant, so we're not going to hit that ceiling. And we're doing everything we can to be, you know, compliant with the display requirements and all that good stuff. And we work with Google Plus and Facebook and Foursquare and Bitly and lots of other networks too. So, we're in good shape. But
awesome.
Get on the waiting list. You can do some from the homepage right now, and we will start hopefully rolling out soon, next few months.
I can vouch for, even if you just want to, you know, just for fun, I can vouch how cool this is. There's Chad's.
Yeah. There's Chad's. So, that's the 1.0. That's our stable 1.0 version. We have a 2.0 beta that's kind of more of a stream than a dashboard, and which we're working on hard now. We're trying to get that to stable release. But, yeah, these are the kind of stats that you'll be able to see. But our new 2.0 version, we're trying to kind of tell you, instead of just showing you a chart, we're trying to tell you what it is about that chart that's meaningful.
Oh, neat.
So you don't have to stare at bars and lines going up and down. So it's going to be kind of a stream of insights that pop up. So if you get, see a follower spike, or if you get a retweet spike, or if someone with tons of followers retweets you, for example, you'll get an alert about that. So that's what we're working on now. So if you're super geeky and you have a web server, you can download the 2.0 beta and install it on your own web server if you're impatient, want to try it out. Otherwise, get your name on our waiting list, and we'll get you a spot as soon as it opens up.
Just added my name to the waiting list. Very cool.
Thank you.
Gina Trapani at smarterware.org as well. That's her blog. Buzzmachine.com is Jeff Jarvis's. Thanks to Andreas Ekstrom for joining us, too, to talk about Google Bar. We thank you for being here. We do this show 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time. That's 2000 UTC on twit.tv. Watch live if you can, but if you can't, don't worry. On-demand audio and video available after the fact at twit.tv/twig. And wherever you get your podcasts from, we're up there too. Google Bar. You can't Google Bar us. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Twig.